Thank you. Heard about the initiation just one day before it was to take place. I had been busy with my music and hadn't been attending. I was walking down Second Avenue with one of the prospective initiates, and he mentioned to me that there was going to be something called an initiation ceremony. I asked what it was about, and he said, "All I know is it means that you accept the spiritual master as God." This was a big surprise to me, and I hardly knew how to take it. But I didn't take it completely seriously, and the way it was mentioned to me in such an offhand way made it seem not very important. He asked me very casually whether I was going to be involved, and I, also being very casual about it, said, "Well, I think I will. Why not? I'll give it a try." Jan didn't think she would make an obedient disciple, and initiation sounded frightening. She liked the Swami, especially cooking with him, but it was Mike who convinced her he was coming, so she should come along with him. Carl Jurgens knew something about initiation from his readings, and he, more than the others, knew what a serious commitment it was. He was surprised to hear that Swamiji was offering initiation, and he was cautious about entering into it. He knew that initiation meant no illicit sex, intoxication, or meeting, and an initiated disciple would have new responsibilities for spreading the teaching to others. Carl was already feeling less involved since the Swami had moved to Second Avenue, but he decided to attend the initiation anyway. Bill Epstein never professed to be a serious disciple. Holding initiation was just another part of the Swami's scene, and you were free to take it seriously or not. He figured it was all right to take initiation, even if you weren't serious. He would try it. Carol Becker was surprised to hear that some people would be taking initiation, even though they had no intention of giving up their bad habits. She had stopped coming around regularly ever since the Swami had moved, and she felt no desire to ask for initiation. The Swami probably wouldn't initiate women anyway, she figured. Robert Nelson hadn't forgotten the Swami and always liked to help whenever he could. But except for an occasional friendly visit, he had stopped coming. He mostly stayed to himself. He still lived uptown and wasn't into the Lower East Side scene. James Green thought he wasn't pure enough to be initiated. Who am I to be initiated? But the Swami had asked him to bring something over to the storefront. I came, and it was just understood that I was supposed to be initiated, so I thought, why not? Stanley had been chanting regularly again and had come out of his crazy mood. He was sticking with the Swami and his followers. He asked his mother if he could be initiated, and she said it would be all right. He wanted more to think about it. Keith was in the hospital. Bruce had been attending for a week or two, and it was too soon. Chuck was on a week's vacation from the regulated spiritual life at the temple, so he couldn't know about the initiation. Read one more paragraph. No one was asked to shave his head, or even cut his hair, or change his dress. No one offered Prabhupada the traditional guru dakshin, the donation a disciple is supposed to offer as a gesture of his great obligation to his master. Hardly anyone even relieved him of his chores, so Swamiji himself had to do do most of the cooking and other preparations for the initiation. He was perfectly aware of the mentality of his boys, and he didn't try to force anything on anyone. Some of the initiates didn't know until after the initiation, when they had inquired, that the four rules, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, and no gambling, were mandatory for all disciples. Prabhupada's reply then was, "I am very glad that you are finally asking me that." I think that you need to push it up here. I don't think that's very well.
Navai nivritti dharme nan. Savai nivritti dharme nan. Vasudeva nukampaya. Bhagavad bhakti yogena. Bhagavad bhakti yogena. Tirodate shanai riha. Tirodate shanai riha. Savai nivritti dharmena. Vasudeva nukampaya. Bhagavad bhakti yogena. Tirodate shanai riha. Savai nivritti dharmena. Vasudeva nukampaya. Bhagavad bhakti yogena. Tirodhatte shanariha. Savai nivritti dharmena. Vai also. Nivritti, detachment. Dharmena, by engagement. Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anukampaya, by the mercy of Bhagavad, in relation with the personality of Godhead. Bhakti yogena, by linking up. Tirodhate, diminishes. Shanahai, gradually. Iha, in this existence. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. But that misconception of self-identity can be diminished gradually by the mercy of the personality of Godhead Vasudeva through the process of devotional service to the Lord in the mode of detachment, responsibly. But that misconception of self-identity can be diminished gradually by the mercy of the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, through the process of devotional service to the Lord in a mode of detachment. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The quivering quality of material existence, which comes from identification with matter, or from thinking oneself under the material influence of philosophical speculation to be God, can be eradicated by devotional service to the Lord by the mercy of the personality of Godhead Vasudeva. As discussed in the first canto, because the application of devotional service to Lord Vasudeva invites pure knowledge, it quickly detaches one from the material conception of life and thus revives one's normal condition of spiritual existence, even in this life, and frees one from the material winds which cause one to quiver. Only knowledge in devotional service can elevate one towards the path of liberation. The development of knowledge for the purpose of knowing everything without rendering devotional service is considered fruitless labor, and one cannot get the desired result by such labor of love. Lord Vasudeva is pleased by devotional service only, and thus his mercy is realized by association with pure devotees of the Lord. Pure devotees of the Lord are transcendental to all material desires, including the desire for the results of fruitive activities and philosophical speculation. If one wants to acquire the mercy of the Lord, he has to associate with pure devotees. Such association alone can, by degrees, release one from the quivering elements. Omagina Timinandasya Garananjana Salakaya Chaksurun Vidam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manuvistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Karamayam Prati Svaparantikam Ukam Karoti Vachalam Angam Langaya Tegirim Yakripa Taraham Vande Paramananda Bhadavam. Prabhupada used this word quivering three times in the purport. It's kind of an unusual word. We don't use it very often. Quiver. Sometimes I've heard devotional service compared to an arrow that's quivering in the center of its target. Prabhupada's using it here to indicate that material existence is rippling or rumbling or unsteady, somehow not calm and placid, not like the soul, which is unchanging and always the same. Of course, the soul is dragged through different kinds of material existence by our conditioned mentality, and we become conditioned souls. The nature of material life is tottering. That's another word Prabhupada uses. It's tottering on the brink of the precipice, we might say. There's that nice illustration that we see in the Bhagavad Gita, the picture of the chariot being pulled by the horses around a path. It's on the side of a mountain. On one side is the mountain, on the other side is the precipice. This indicates that material life is very dangerous. Our senses are out of control, like the wild horses. At any moment, they could gallop off the precipice and lead the soul, chariot, and the soul, chariot the body, the soul, to destructive sequences, to a destructive future. Yesterday, a man was asking in the Sunday festival about the comparison between service, devotional service, and pure devotional service, and he wanted to know how you get from one to the other. How he wanted to know, does devotional service become pure devotional service? So that was a very interesting question, because we often encounter Prabhupada using this word pure, or the phrase pure devotional service. And here he says that the quivering quality of material existence, which comes from identifying with matter, can be eradicated by devotional service to the Lord. Devotional service, as I was explaining to him yesterday, starts with impure or motivated desires. There's a mixture. Some of it's called kama mishra bhakti, a mixture of purity and impurity. All devotional service actually starts that way. And there's a well-known verse in the third chapter, the second canon, which goes kama sarva kama va moksha kama udarati. It's a famous verse in which it's explained by Srila Prabhupada in his translation that he says, a person with broader intelligence, whether he be full of material desires or free from material desires or desiring liberation, must, without any hesitation, engage in the process of devotional service. By all means, worship the Supreme Holy Personality of Godhead, Yajeta Purusham Param. So this means that bhakti yoga is so powerful that even if it's impure in the beginning, even if it's devotional service that's not devoid of jnana and karma or anything else, desires to have liberation, and in the traditional sense, the word moksha, to just be free of the material world, to get liberated in some way, then it should still be engaged in, because it's devotional service. And as Prabhupada says, it is by devotional service that we can get rid of this quivering existence. And he says, this devotional service detaches one from material conditions and revives our normal condition of spiritual existence, even in this life, and frees from the material winds which cause one to quiver. It's a very interesting metaphor he's used, because sometimes another word might be shiver, when there's a cold wind. We stand on the cold wind and we shiver. So he's comparing the material nature, like a wind causes us to quiver, or like a cold wind that causes us to shiver. It's not very pleasant. We're walking along, and all of a sudden there's an icy wind that comes up, and it just causes us to shiver, or ripple, or whatever. It's not very pleasant. So this is the way he compares material life. He illustrates it. It's not pleasant. The feeling isn't good, and it causes us to react in a way that's not very comfortable, it's not pleasing. And we were instructed in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, not just partial Sukhanti, that we have to tolerate these kinds of things. We have to learn, as transcendentalists in the material world, we have to learn that it's not always going to be a walk in the woods or a picnic at the beach, as they say. But there's going to be all sorts of tribulations that come across. A transcendentalist learns how to expect these things. A transcendentalist learns to tolerate these things without being disturbed. A transcendentalist knows that these are a part of existence and prepares to tolerate them. This is one of the values that people are sometimes very distraught because they're not being taught in school. Young children scream when things don't go their way. Sometimes they fight, sometimes they kill when they're not satisfied. When they don't get what they want, just like little children, 1, 2, 3 years old, if they don't get to eat when they want, if they're not warm when they want to be warm, if they don't get a drink of water, they start to scream and cry, and it gets very annoying. Adults are in the same mode because they're not trained to go beyond that. They're not trained to tolerate in their life. So when they don't get what they want, they also tend to be violent, to scream, to kick and cry, and do all kinds of things that are considered to be inhuman or debilitating to the finer sentiments of human life. So this is a very interesting verse because it tells that we have to begin devotional service at any point, at any time, whether we're full of desires, whether we want liberation, whether we have no desires. Devotional service is so powerful that it will purify us and we'll come to the pure devotional platform. So I'm going to read a little bit what Prabhupada said about this verse in the second canto. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is described as Purushottama, the Supreme Personality. It is he only who can award liberation to the impersonalists by absorbing such aspirants in the Brahma Jyoti, the bodily rays of the Lord. The Brahma Jyoti is not separate from the Lord, as the glowing sun ray is not independent of the sun disk. Therefore, one who desires to merge into the supreme impersonal Brahma Jyoti must also worship the Lord by Bhakti Yoga, as recommended here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhakti Yoga is especially stressed here as the means of all perfection. In the previous chapters, it has been stated that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of both Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. And in the same way, in this chapter, it is emphatically declared that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of the different varieties of worship of the different demigods. Bhakti Yoga, thus being the supreme means of self-realization, is recommended here. Everyone must seriously, therefore, take up the methods of Bhakti Yoga, even though one aspires for material enjoyment or liberation from material bondage. When one aspires for anything, a big position, whether it be a heavyweight championship or a top goalie in the rugby team or a top sailor for America's Cup or an aspiring jnani, someone who wants to get a PhD or be great in any field, a great leader, a great politician, there's tremendous endeavor involved, and it's a very graduated process. It's stratified. You go step by step, and finally, if karma wants you to and Krishna approves, you can attain the highest rung of the championship or the supreme position in one of these fields. But Bhakti Yoga is a little bit different. Although there is a gradual and step-by-step process to attain perfection, one can come to the highest level of perfection straight away. It doesn't have to take many, many years and a long endeavor. It may only come in glimpses, but it does come, and one can be on that pure devotional platform by sincerely desiring to do so. And we've seen that this is actually possible, that one can be very elevated, even from a very lowly beginning. From the very start, some people have some special dispensation or special sincerity, maybe it's due to their karma, and for this reason, they find themselves at the very beginning speaking to many people, going out and distributing books and lecturing and speaking to sometimes people who have become very elevated in terms of jnana, very wise people, so-called scholars. Once Prabhupada said that any of our boys can defeat even the greatest scholar. Any of our boys, meaning people that were at that time, it was in the late 60s, they couldn't have been more than a few years along in devotional service, could defeat even the greatest scholars. And the reason for this is that in devotional service we have one special instruction. We've learned something, some philosophical point that's different, and that is that we're not the body. We've learned that we're the Atma, or we're the soul. This type of knowledge is not being taught anywhere. It hasn't been learned by anyone. It's not part of the body of knowledge of any of the greatest scholars in the world. When they hear even a neophyte, one who may not even be very well versed in history and philosophy, they're very interested. They find this is something unique. It's not being taught by any religion. It's not being taught in any philosophy. It's not being taught or learned anywhere. So in this way, one who starts devotional service comes to this very elevated, very lofty platform of philosophical understanding, something that others are unaware of. This is one of the reasons why people like Wordsworth and Thoreau and Goethe and other philosophers and scholars and vague idea about the soul, but existence of the soul is only found in the Vedic literature. And of course, Bhagavad Gita is the most popular book. And many Western philosophers have delved into this book and find it very, very special. So devotional service is special because one who is engaged in devotional service can speak from this platform and speak very assertively, that yes, I'm not the body. This is very unique and very attractive. So Prabhupada continues in his purport. This, by the way, is Maharaj Parikit speaking to, Sukadeva Goswami speaking to Maharaj Parikit. Akama is the one who has no material desire, a living being, naturally being the part and parcel of the Supreme Whole, Purusham Purnam, has as his natural function to serve the Supreme Being, just as the parts and parcels of the body, or the limbs of the body, are naturally meant to serve the complete body. Desireless means, therefore, not to be inert like the stone, but to be conscious of one's actual position, and thus desire satisfaction only from the Supreme Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained this desirelessness as Bhajaniya Parama Purusha Sukhamatrasva Sakatvam in his Sandarbha. This means that one should feel happy only by experiencing the happiness of the Supreme Lord. This intuition of the living being is sometimes manifested even during the conditioned stage of a living being in the material world. And such intuition is expressed in the manner of altruism, philanthropy, socialism, communism, etc. By the undeveloped minds of less intelligent persons. In the mundane field, such an outlook of doing good to others in the form of society, community, family, country, or humanity is a partial manifestation of the same original feeling in which a pure living entity feels happiness by the happiness of the Supreme Lord. Such superb feelings were exhibited by the damsels of Rajabhumi for the happiness of the Lord. The gopis loved the Lord without any return. And this is the perfect exhibition of the akama spirit. Kama spirit, or the desire for one's own satisfaction, is fully exhibited in the material world, whereas the spirit of akama is exhibited in the spiritual world. Here Prabhupada's making a distinction between kama and akama. This is another way of saying that kama is the spirit of enjoyment and akama is the spirit of renunciation. The spirit of renunciation is coupled with the desire to serve the Lord, to please the Lord, to please the senses of the Lord. So although it's desirelessness, it's also desire because it's the desire to serve the Lord. And kama, which is desire of the material things, is manifested in its pure form in the spiritual world because we desire to serve the Lord. And it is that desire which sustains devotees. So that, in a sense, is the spirit of renunciation, because the spirit of renunciation is achieved by one who wants to serve the Lord. The spirit of enjoyment, on the other hand, is manifested in one who doesn't want to serve the Lord, who only wants to serve one's own senses. So this becomes kama, or the spirit of enjoyment. A devotee that I know came over from the former Soviet Union, and people in the former Soviet Union underwent a very repressive regime for about 70 years after the Bolshevik Revolution under Stalin and his followers. Prabhupada also commented when he went there for the first time that people looked very depressed, dejected, and he prophesied that this wouldn't last very long. In fact, he prophesied almost to the day, or at least to the year, that there would be a change in government, that the regime of communism under Lenin would fall under his philosophy. So this devotee came over, and we went for a walk near the temple in a park called Great Falls. It's a national park, owned by the National Park Service, and people are walking around with their families and looking at the beautiful waterfalls and the river and all the nice trees and hearing the birds and looking at the nice geese that walk around there. And he was amazed, and he said to me, "These people are really in the enjoying spirit." He'd never seen anything like it, because in the former Soviet Union, people always looked depressed. And I had been there many times, and even after glasnost and perestroika, people are still looking very depressed compared to the way they look in some places like this, or Europe, or America. So he was amazed that people are into this spirit of enjoyment. And that's what comes with material well-being, the spirit of enjoyment, kama, wanting to gratify the senses, seeing everything as being progressive and going somewhere and enjoying. That's the mood. So he noticed that in the people's faces. So Prabhupada continues. Thoughts of becoming one with the Lord or being merged in the Brahma-jyoti can also be exhibitions of kama spirit if there are desires for one's own satisfaction to be free from the material miseries. A pure devotee does not want liberation so that he may be relieved from the miseries of life. Even without so-called liberation, a pure devotee is aspirant for the satisfaction of the Lord. Influenced by the kama spirit, Arjuna declined to fight in the Kurukshetra battlefield because he wanted to save his relatives for his own satisfaction. But being a pure devotee, he agreed to fight on the instruction of the Lord because he came to his senses and realized that satisfaction of the Lord at the cost of his own satisfaction was his prime duty. Thus he became akama. This is the stage of a perfect living being. Udaradi means one who has a broader outlook. People with desires for material enjoyment worship small demigods, and such intelligence is condemned in the Bhagavad Gita, 7:20. As Ritigyana, in the seventh chapter, the intelligence of one who has lost his senses. One cannot obtain any result from demigods without getting sanction from the Supreme Lord. Therefore, a person with a broader outlook can see that the ultimate authority is the Lord, even for material benefits. Under the circumstances, one with a broader outlook, even with a desire for material enjoyment or for liberation, should take to the worship of the Lord directly. And everyone, whether an akama or sakama or mokshakama, should worship the Lord with great expedience. This implies that bhakti yoga may be perfectly administered without any mixture of karma and jnana. As the unmixed sun ray is very forceful and is therefore called tivra, similarly, unmixed bhakti yoga of hearing, chanting, etc. may be performed by one and all, regardless of inner motive. So this is a very special and important verse because it indicates that one can begin, and one must begin, the process of chanting at any stage, and must begin devotional service at any stage of life, that there's no bar or restriction, as is often thought. And as I was saying to this gentleman yesterday, one of the unique things that Prabhupada taught us is that we should, and we can, and we must begin anywhere and everywhere devotional service. It doesn't really matter where we're coming from, or what level of existence or mentality we're on, or what our gender, nationality, race, or whatever. Whatever our age is, we can begin. So, in the making the distinction between devotional service and pure devotional service, I was explaining to this gentleman yesterday that when we begin devotional service, we're generally attracted by things like kama, by jnana, by our activities. So in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and Prabhupada again quotes this in the Krishnadas Kaviraj quotes this in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita. There's another verse, Anya Bilasita Sunyam, Jana Karma, Jana Brita, Anukulyena Krishnanu, Shilanam Bhakti Uttama. This says that there is such a thing as pure devotional service, and that is what we should actually strive for, even though in the beginning we may not have it. So I'm going to read, if you'll indulge me one more time, what Prabhupada said about this verse, because this is a very, very important verse. He quoted it many, many times. Anyavilasita sunyam jnana karma jnanavritam anakuyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttama. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita translates it like this: When first class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material and desires, knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy and fruitive action. The devotee must constantly serve Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. And this is what he says in the purport. This verse is also found By the way, these are Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami, which are very lengthy. He spoke with him every day for 2 months and imparted many great bits of knowledge to him. This verse is found in Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, as we can understand from Bhagavad Gita 9:34 and 18:65. The Supreme Personality of Godhead wants everyone to think of Him always, manmana bhavan mad bhakto. Everyone should become His devotee, not the devotee of a demigod. Everyone should engage in His devotional service, including archana, deity worship, in the temple. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhya jimam namaskaru. Everyone should offer obeisances from moment to moment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These are the desires of the Supreme Lord, and one who fulfills His desires favorably is actually a pure devotee. Krishna wants everyone to surrender unto Him, and devotional service means preaching this gospel all over the world. The Lord says openly in the Bhagavad Gita, 1869, Ajat tasman manushesu kashin me priyakrita maha. One who preaches the gospel of the Bhagavad Gita for the benefit of all is most dear to Krishna. Now this is interesting because in the Bhagavad Gita itself, Prabhupada translates this verse a little bit differently, or the one before a little bit differently. This is his translation. He says, for one who explains this supreme secret to the devotees, pure devotional service is guaranteed, and at the end he will come back to me. But here, Prabhupada is saying, one who preaches this gospel of Bhagavad Gita for the benefit of all is most dear to Krishna. So what does Prabhupada say in the purport to the verse where he says you're only to preach to devotees? This is what he says. Generally, it is advised that Bhagavad Gita be discussed amongst the devotees only. For those who are not devotees will understand neither Krishna nor Bhagavad Gita. Those who do not accept Krishna as He is and Bhagavad Gita as it is should not try to explain Bhagavad Gita whimsically and become offenders. Bhagavad Gita should be explained to persons who are ready to accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is a subject for devotees only and not for philosophical speculators. Anyone, however, who tries to... Now, this seems to be in contradiction to what Prabhupada said about one who preaches the gospel of Bhagavad Gita for the benefit of all is most dear to Krishna, which is what the next verse... What's that verse in the next verse says? The next verse says in the Bhagavad Gita, there is no servant in this world more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one more dear. But in the last sentence of this purport, Prabhupada writes, from any point of view, human society... The last sentence, he says, anyone, however, who tries sincerely to present Bhagavad Gita as it is will advance in devotional service activities and reach the pure devotional state of life. And as a result of such pure devotion, he is sure to go back home, back to Godhead. So this is an indication that even though maybe not everyone is a devotee or sees that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, still the instruction is given to us that we have to approach everybody. And in one interview, Prabhupada was asked, how many disciples do you have? I heard this on a tape once, and he said, unlimited. And the person that asked him the question was very shocked. And then Prabhupada answered further by saying, of course, some don't realize it. So the indication was that everyone is actually a devotee. And we read in the Bhagavad Gita, mama evamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana, that everyone is part and parcel of Krishna. So they don't know it, but there are devotees. So we can read a little between the lines here and see that Prabhupada is asking us to approach anyone and everyone. And therefore, in that way, we can become very dear to Krishna. And even though they might not know their devotees, or they might not know Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, directly, indirectly, they are devotees. Just like the people who want to create values in the school system and kids with character, they're indirectly, because they're not knowingly advocating this, but indirectly they're saying that they want to bring God back, indirectly, into school, so that there will be values. Because without God, there can't really be any values of any lasting character, of any lasting nature. Now, Prabhupada writes in this purport, he continues, first he says, one who preaches the gospel of Bhagavad Gita for the benefit of all is most dear to Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita is spoken by the Lord so that human society can be perfectly organized from all angles of vision. Now here again, he's addressing all members of society, not just the inner circle of devotees, but he says, Bhagavad Gita is spoken by the Lord so that human society, we're talking about 6 billion people on this planet, it's not a small number, can be perfectly organized from all angles of vision. And this brings in this question of Varnashram, which we were discussing last time I gave class, that Prabhupada's vision was the big vision, the big picture, to be satisfied, not just pleased with any little devotional service, which he is, but to be satisfied by seeing that there's a mega change. The social system is revamped. It's changed. There's a social agenda. That's the Daiva Varnashram system. Reform, renovation of society. I think in one or more classes and in his writing, he talked about re-spiritualization, that the purpose, the mission of the Krishna Consciousness Movement was re-spiritualization of human society. It's interesting that he said re, because that indicates that at one time it was spiritual, or even maybe that it is spiritual now, but it's sublimated. People don't know it. Therefore, one who spreads this philosophy of Krishna consciousness for the benefit of all conditioned souls in the universe is perfect in pure devotional service. So this is another way that pure devotional service is distinguished from devotional service. One who spreads this philosophy, in other words, the spirit of spreading, of preaching, being a Gostyanandi rather than a Vajranandi, of Krishna consciousness is for the benefit of all. And this doesn't mean to say that one who's a Vajranandi and just trying to advance in Krishna consciousness for one's own sake is bad or doing something wrong, but it's making the distinction that if the whole world and everyone in it is seen as one's own family and in need of spiritual help and development, that's a higher position from the relative point of view. One who spreads this philosophy of Krishna consciousness for the benefit of all conditioned souls in the universe is perfect in pure devotional service. So that indicates that pure devotional service is the method of approaching anyone and everyone of preaching. And that makes one very dear to Krishna. That distinguishes pure devotional service from, say, impure devotional service, trying to elevate oneself, being full of material desires, trying to get liberation, trying to be a great jnani, trying to be a great yogi or a karmi. But pure devotional service is when one is fully engaged in this preaching spirit, trying to enlighten others, to lift the burden that's weighing upon other people, the spirit of enjoyment. It's actually a burden. It's the wind that causes people to quiver. To stop that wind, to create the perfect firewall or windbreak, is to engage in pure devotional service. And then Prabhupada continues. The criterion is that a devotee must know what Krishna wants him to do. This understanding can be achieved through the medium of a spiritual master, who is a bona fide representative of Krishna. Srila Rupa Goswami advises, Ado Guruvastrayam. One who is serious in wanting to render pure devotional service to the Lord must take shelter of a spiritual master who comes in the disciplic succession from Krishna. Evam parampara praptam imam rajarsha yoviduhu. Bhagavad Gita 4.2. Without accepting a bona fide spiritual master coming in the disciplic succession, one cannot find out the real purpose of devotional service. Therefore, one has to accept the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and agree to be directed by him. The first business of a pure devotee is to satisfy a spiritual master whose only business is to spread Krishna consciousness. That's another indication of what purity and pure devotional service is, spreading Krishna consciousness. And if one can satisfy the spiritual master, Krishna is automatically satisfied. Yes, your prasada, Bhagavat prasada. This is the success of devotional service, and this is the meaning of the word anukulyena. That is, favorable devotional service to the Lord. A pure devotee has no plans other than those of the Lord's service, other than those for the Lord's service. He is not interested in attaining success in mundane activities. Simply he wants success in the progress of devotional service. For a devotee, there cannot be worship of others or demigod worship. A pure devotee does not engage himself in such pseudo-devotional service. He is interested only in satisfying Krishna. If one lives only for the satisfaction of Krishna, it does not matter whether he belongs to this order of life or that order of life. One's only business should be to satisfy Krishna. This process is completely manifest in the activities of the Krishna consciousness movement. So Prabhupada had a lot of faith in the Krishna consciousness movement. His absolute faith was that if you join the Krishna consciousness movement, you would be engaging in pure devotional service. That doesn't mean necessarily that you have to be on the front line, that you have to be out in the street chanting, you have to be out in the street giving out books, that you have to be running a restaurant or distributing prasadam or in people's homes, preaching to them to expand the congregation. You can assist any one of those things. You can just be in the kitchen all the time. You can just be out on the fields all the time. But because the movement is engaged, as Prabhupada indicates, in pure devotional service, then you're engaged in pure devotional service, no matter what you're doing, if you're part of the movement. This process, Prabhupada writes, is completely manifest in the activities of the Krishna conscious movement. Activities means anything. It could be fixing cars. Whatever it is, you're in pure devotional service because the movement is in pure devotional service. It has been actually proved that the entire world can accept devotional service without failure. That's a pretty strong statement. It has been, I mean, if you try to analyze that and prove it, or see to how it's actually true, it's very difficult. But Prabhupada is making a very strong assertion here. He says it has been actually proved that the entire world can accept devotional service without failure. Maybe he's saying that because he realized that when he came to a place like New York, which is where all the four regulative principles were being broken constantly, especially when he was walking up and down 42nd Street. It's a street in New York that's so brightly lit up at night that it looks like daytime, like parts of Las Vegas. And there's advertisements everywhere for girls, for meat, for gambling, for intoxication. I mean, it's just openly advertised everywhere, and people are selling all these things to you. They're walking up to you. So if you don't see it on the signs, people are coming up to you and selling it to you. You can't get away from it. Well, those same people became devotees. So Prabhupada's written, it has actually been proven that the entire world can accept devotional service without fail. So if those people can accept devotional service, then obviously they can accept it anywhere. Because that's the center, the hub, the citadel, the center of sense gratification, as far as I know. I mean, I've been around the world a few times and haven't seen anything quite that bad, you might say. It's pretty bad. Pretty bad, 42nd Street. One simply has to follow the instructions of the representative of Krishna. That's the way Prabhupada ends that verse. So I'll read this one again. Savai nivritti dharmena vasudeva nukampaya bhagavat bhakti yogena tirodate shanayriha. But that misconception of self-identity can be diminished gradually by the mercy of the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, through the process of devotional service to the Lord in the mode of detachment. Any comments? No questions? Take any? Very difficult, with great difficulty. That would be the answer. It's possible that there have been cases. Sukadeva Goswami was said to be an impersonalist. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Ramananda Bharati, Bilba Mangal Thakur, they were steeped in impersonalism. They were brought up that way. They were trained that you just try to merge with the Brahma Jyoti. But they were captivated by either Krishna directly, or by Lord Chaitanya, or by his devotees. They were captivated, and as Bilba Mangal Thakur said, that I was brought up to be an impersonalist all my life, but I have been captivated. I have become the maidservant of a young boy who jokes with the gopis. So, it's possible. The Kumaras smelled the tulsi leaves at the feet of Lord Narayan, and they became devotees. Brahmananda Bharati became attracted to Lord Chaitanya. As soon as he knew that Lord Chaitanya wasn't approving of his deerskin, he thought in his mind that Lord Chaitanya doesn't approve of my deerskin. I can't go back to Godhead just by wearing a deerskin or a piece of bark, which the Bharati sannyasis, the impersonalist sannyasis, used to do. So they, and theirs is a kind of desire. They desire to be free from material desire. That in itself is a kind of desire. It is unusual and exceptional that such persons become devotees. Generally they don't, but they can, and there have been instances in which they do. So it's difficult, very difficult. But it can happen by the mercy of the devotees and the mercy of Krishna. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, generally, people use, the word has been used very irresponsibly of late. There's the Palestinian Liberation Organization. And the word liberation has been used mostly to talk about, in the 60s, there was women's liberation. And, you know, there's all sorts of, for social, for economic reasons, the word liberation. It's a very popular word. There was an airplane that was called the Liberator that was used by the Americans against the Germans in World War II. And it's very popular now. I don't know what the other uses are, but there's many, many uses. So it's roughly translated, moksha, as liberation. But Madhvacharya says that liberation, what it actually means, the constitutional position, I had you read that the other day in the purport to verse 435 in the Bhagavad Gita, that real liberation means that we attain our constitutional position as eternal servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we attain a position at the lotus feet of the Lord. That's what liberation actually means. And moksha, actually, that actually means a kind of impersonal liberation. It just means, like you said, freedom from maya, or freedom from the material world. It doesn't necessarily, generally, doesn't mean attaining a position at the lotus feet of the Lord in our constitutional position. But Madhvacharya specified that this is what we really mean by liberation. So the word is unfortunately not used properly. Unfortunately, liberation. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the definition of. There's five types of liberation, there's four types of people. You mean like the inquisitive, the seeking after. Akama. Akama moksha karmava. Is that necessarily, is that the kind of liberation we're speaking of, you mean, like moksha? Akama. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of material desire, without any material desire, or desiring liberation. That desiring liberation means just to be freed from the material world. It doesn't mean the kind of liberation that, you know, to attain the lotus feet of the Lord. That kind of liberation, the ultimate liberation, is worship, is pure devotional service, is what we aspire for in pure devotional service. So yeah, this verse is making the distinction between impersonal moksha, desire for liberation, and pure devotional service when we desire to be an Adam at the lotus feet of Krishna, and a servant, a pure servant of Krishna. Yeah. Any others? Mother? Yeah. Right. Yeah. And there's a verse, Ishvara Taradineshu, that says that there are four types of approaches, or four relationships. One is to make friends with the Supreme Lord, or to worship the Supreme Lord. To make friends with the devotees, to preach to everyone, that is to consider everyone as palisheshu drishachu yat, to consider everyone as one's own children, and fourth is to avoid the envious. Now, your question is, how do we know who is really envious, or who's really going to commit offenses in their mind, or make us be offenders by preaching to them when they just don't want to hear, when they're going to get more angry? In the Bhagavad Gita, where Prabhupada talks in his purport, and I think it's the verse where he talks about the demonic personalities, that in the 16th chapter, I believe it's there. It may not be in that chapter, but he specifically specifies in the purport that Nityananda, for example, took a lot of risk when he approached Shigaya and Madai, and they had a very bad reputation among the Brahmins. They were not only known as women hunters and drinkers, but they were all sorts of sinful people. They had committed murder. They had done all sorts of really bad things. But Nityananda took the risk of not only preaching to them, but stopping Lord Chaitanya from punishing them. And in that purport, Prabhupada talks about how he, as the spiritual master of the age, was exemplifying how we have to sort of approach anyone and everyone, regardless of what reputation they might have or whatever their external appearance may be. There was a case I was remembering, I think I told about this before, of a devotee whose first encounter with the Sankirtan party was that he kicked a devotee in the leg. And he became a very great, I mean, elevated Vaishnava. He still is still very much very active and part of the movement. But who knows? You know, we don't know what the background of anyone is, because the age is so powerful. The Goswamis, especially Rupa and Sanatan, they were associating very intimately, it is described, with meat eaters. They were in that, they were associated, they were very responsible people in the Patan government. And